From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 117 of Little Brother for the 4th of February, 2023. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com or you can post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started. Anyone watching politics in this country, and many who haven't, have heard the non-stop drumbeat about Hunter Biden's laptop computer. The backstory is that the president's son dropped off his laptop computer for repair at a small independent computer shop owned by John Paul McIsaac. McIsaac, while in possession of the laptop, looked into the personal contents of the machine in a manner that appears to be a common but unethical breach of trust between the repair service and their client. Finding information that he was convinced was of political value, he turned it into the government and also wrote a book on the topic. This is in the news once again for two reasons. First off, the newly elected Republican majority of the House seemed to be interested in using this to attempt to harm the president politically. But second, and more interestingly, Hunter Biden is launching a counteroffensive, requesting that the Department of Justice probe this violation of his confidentiality. Speaking of ethical breaches, in Texas, the San Benito School District sent a number of their decommissioned computers to a refurbisher recycler. The computers were auctioned off and purchased by a Brownsville-based tech company, RDA Technologies. Well, turns out that the school district did not properly remove the data from the computers prior to sending them to auction, and RDA have allegedly offered to sell some of the computers back to the school district for the price of just under $100,000. This would appear to be a professional black eye both for RDA, who should have silently sanitized the school's former computers and moved on, and also for the school district, which needs to exercise greater care in their decommissioning process. ADS-B is a standard that defines beacons that are carried by aircraft that can be used to easily identify any aircraft, be it commercial, military, government, private, whatever. Think of it like an electronic counterpart to the tail number that you can find on any aircraft. It's an open standard, and anyone is able to receive the signals. The most popular technique for doing so is to use an RTL-SDR receiver dongle with a Raspberry Pi. The problem, of course, is that range is limited to what's in the sky above you, so receiver stations connect to aggregators to crowdsource the movements of aircraft across the country and around the world. This is, of course, how the movements of Elon Musk's private jet were tracked. The news this week is that ADS-B Exchange, one of the crowdsourced aggregators of ADS-B data, is being sold to a commercial interest called JetNet, which mostly provides intelligence to the aviation industry. JetNet, in turn, is owned by Silversmith Capital Partners, a private equity firm. Users of the ADS-B Exchange are not amused, as the crowdsourced, community-powered, community-serving effort now risks becoming somebody's cash cow. Google Fi is a mobile virtual network operator owned, go figure, by Google's parent company, Alphabet. Like any MVNO, they have no network infrastructure of their own, but instead rent airtime on other networks, in this case, T-Mobile, US Cellular, and Three. This week, Google Fi are informing their customers that a data breach has occurred at one of their telecoms providers, enabling SIM swaps to be carried out against their customers. Interestingly enough, I reported on a breach of T-Mobile 2 episodes ago, and so I'm going to assume that this is the provider in question. This is problematic because of the three providers that Google Fi is using, T-Mobile has the largest footprint, being present in the US and many parts of Europe. Finally, there is a story making the rounds on social media that, after making the disclaimer that you should never ever do this, that the variable message signs that we see along highways and in construction zones are very hackable. The article goes on to explain step by step how to do so. Apparently, the signs often remain set to their default passwords, and there is also, on many of them, a hardwired second password that can be used to factory reset the machine, including returning the password to the default. We'll talk more about this with some of the members of the Albany 2600 group later on in this episode. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned This Week? We have three this week. First up, Yandex. Yandex is a Russian-owned search engine, allegedly comparable to Google in terms of capability and reach. It appears that a 44-gigabyte archive has appeared on an underground website alleging to contain the Yandex source code. Yandex have stated that the source code, dated the 24th of February 2022, the day that Russia invaded Ukraine, is both out of date and incomplete. Security researcher Arseniy Shestakov, who spotted the leak in the wild, claims that the archive contains data from all of Yandex's services, and I'm left wondering if this pwn was instrumental in the Yandex taxi incident that I mentioned in episodes 100 and 101. Continuing in Russia, a group operating under the anonymous flag have struck at the heart of the Russian state. They have dropped 128 gigabytes of documents harvested via Russian internet provider Convex concerning a project called Green Atom. Green Atom, if the documents are to be believed, is a mass surveillance dragnet carried out by the FSB against the Russian citizenry. It appears to be a violation of Russian law, using unauthorized wiretapping, surveillance of Russian citizens without warrant. Those of us who watch the behavior of governments of the prominent nations of the world should hardly find this implausible. Finally, there's been a data breach at background check provider PeopleConnect, who own both the Truthfinder and Checkmate background check services. Apparently, a backup database from 4 years ago was leaked, potentially affecting, in a very profound and direct manner, the information of approximately 20 million individuals. I am here at the Albany 2600 meeting on Friday night. That happens on the first Friday night of every month at 6 p.m. at the Starbucks on Stuyvesant Plaza. And if you could change the messages on the variable message signs in the area, what would you do with them?
I mean, obviously, memes.
The only thing that comes to mind immediately is all your base are belong to us.
Move, zig. Merge left.
Closed for construction of hyperspace bypass.
I actually have a very relevant photo. In early January, this was on the Northway right before exit 5. So what this was it was a message put by the DMV. There was two slides, if you will, and it said if you drive high, and then it would switch to this message and it would say you're out of your mind. And I think if you remove all of the context, like I've never been gaslit by a traffic sign. If I ever make music, I want that to be my album cover. Just because it's without any context. Imagine if a street sign said, do you wonder what people say about you when you leave the room? Right? It's like the equivalent of, like, why are you inspiring such deep introspective thought on the highway?
Some deep philosophical question or remark. I'd been trying to think of something chaotic, evil. Human life is insignificant. What are you supposed to do with that information when you're driving a 2,000-pound machine at 75 miles per hour?
Send Bitcoin to the following address.
Well, if we're going to go the existential and ominous route, then simply have it say, warning. And that's it.
Warning. Sun exploding in 3.9 blah, blah, blah billion.
Water is hotter than average.
Because I like the idea of having a message that's too long. On the front page, it might say, or on page one, it might say something like, under no circumstances should you. And then drink and drive.
You matter. Have a nice day.
What protections should we put in place to isolate consumers from nosy device repair techs?
Condoms.
Masks.
I feel like you would have to look to the legislation that already exists between homeowners and independent contractors, like carpenters or plumbers or electricians. You are asking them to perform work for you on your bit because it's your house. So you're asking them and paying them to do work that you either don't understand how to do. Maybe you do understand it, but you're also not willing to deal with the possible risk of injury, like in, you know, residential electricity or something like that. And so you are giving them access to your home. You would have to have a pretty jaded worldview to assume that by default people are going to look for an opportunity to try and harm you or, you know, take advantage of you. It's always a possibility, but I don't think that should be your modus operandi. Tradesmen coming to your house to do work for you isn't exactly a novel concept, I think, in this day and age. Should there be legislation? Carefully crafted legislation, sure. So, could I come up with an example off the top of my head? Probably nothing better than a straw man to someone else.
I would say that obviously there's an ethical standard that the technician shouldn't be prying into that as much as you can. And then also, like I say, the main thing is that most consumers aren't really going to have a clear idea of what actual data is on their device. So like I say, just making that as transparent as possible. What is the security on the data? What can they access when it's brought in? How can you remove the data beforehand? I think those would be your most basic universal constraints. And then for your more in-depth stuff, like your actual hard drives and stuff, I would recommend Thermite.
Okay. This is the one of the ones where it's really all up to you. You've got to have encryption on your device. You've got to be able to lock it down, BitLocker, something. But your hardware, your entire drive should be encrypted. Your personal files should be encrypted, Veracrypt, something like that. You know, there's almost no reason for most repairers that they would need to actually go into your data. The people that they hire, they don't pay those people enough to care about your personal stuff. They are bored, and it's a lousy job usually, sometimes. So, yeah, they're nosy. When I worked on the AS400 at night, I would go around and find all kinds of cool stuff on that was none of my business, and until I found something that I really wish I had not seen, and that cured me.
So let me give you this to you from the perspective of the repair person, because I had a job where I had to do minor fixes for cell phones. Like, you're worrying about consumers figuring out how to hide their data from people like me. Okay, so people would hand me their cell phone, and right there, the lock screen is an image of a naked woman from porn. You have to swipe right up her crotch to unlock the screen. And then let me tell you about the time, okay? So a family walks in with, like, the mother, father, the teenage boy, and they hand me a phone to fix, and the solution is simply to install a workaround app from the internet. So I go to the internet, and my God, all of you are worrying, you know, oh, do I use BitLocker? How do I protect my data from people who can get at it during startup? No, all I do is launch the browser so I can type in a URL. And right there, front and center, top of the browser, is mother on son porn. Okay, not even normal porn. Mother on son porn. To this day, I don't know which member of the family it belonged to, the mother or the son. Okay, we don't want to know your private information. Please, please, at least just close it or remove it so it's not your wallpaper. Please have some consideration before you bring your device in for repair. Close your porn.
Those were the voices of The Axe That Slayed Me, Ravenscloth, a concerned citizen, an anonymous contributor, and one of Ritter's Critters. Back in episode 108, I talked about a study that had been done by some security researchers at the University of Guelph, where they investigated whether or not computer repair shops would mind their own business. As a quick recap, they basically loaded some laptop computers with bait content, broke something simple on the laptop, and sent them out to a number of shops to be repaired. Of course, the bait laptops also had audit software on them, allowing the researchers to determine whether or not the content of these computers had been accessed, and lo and behold, the privacy of these fake users was indeed violated a number of times. Yesterday, in the face of news concerning John Paul MacIsaac, a computer shop owner who violated the privacy of one of his high-profile clients, see today's headlines, and then wrote a book about it, I find myself asking the question about what we can do about computer repair services that are dishonest, unscrupulous, or just plain nosy. Sadly, the answer for the moment appears to be not much. As a Linux user, I can build my system in such a way that my home directory is encrypted. Doing so means that even having the root password won't grant you access to my files, unless you happen across the machine while I am actually logged into it. However, there are two problems with this. The first is that if I'm a Linux user, there is a high probability that I am already knowledgeable enough to fix my own damn machine. But you can also bet that a commercial repair shop isn't going to touch it. So, I'm on my own. For Windows users, which are the majority of computer users, I know of no equivalent option. At least, not in the base version. Windows 10 Pro offers encryption, but it's up to you to know that you need to buy that version, to figure out how to set it up, and to set it up. I didn't see any info about Windows 11, but I will admit that I didn't look very hard. I believe it's safe to assume the situation is pretty much the same. Now, some of you are probably asking, what about BitLocker? BitLocker locks the whole file system. While that is still a worthwhile thing to do, and I absolutely encourage you to do so, it doesn't meet the need, because you need to be able to decrypt the file system to do any kind of repair work on the OS. So, if you can boot it up, it's decrypted. The idea is to keep somebody with administrator privileges out of the user's data. This doesn't seem to meet that goal. For Mac users, there's an app called Hider, but like Windows 10 Pro, it means you have to pay extra to get it. Now, I mentioned recently that Samsung has a feature on their mobile phones called Repair Mode. It does exactly what we're asking for here. Let the device boot, let someone access the system files to repair the OS, and let them access the apps to run diagnostics, but no access to user data. While I can extol the virtues of Linux as my operating system of choice, that would be Linux Mint Cinnamon for those who want to know what distro, I can't make a blanket recommendation for it unless you can find a repair shop that is willing to provide support, or unless you are, like me, a computer professional with enough knowledge and skill to be self-sufficient to provide your own support. We need this selective encryption feature in our laptop and desktop computers. We need it included at the base level in the mainstream operating systems, Windows and Mac OS, and we really need it yesterday, because what's available does not fit the very real threat model. As usual, we will end this week's episode with the fail of the week. This week, we feature our returning champion, the so-called Electric Reliability Council of Texas, or ERCOT for short. It seems like this issue comes just too often. I last mentioned them in July of last year because it seems as though the state of Texas didn't have enough power to meet the demand of a hot spell. The year before that, the lights and gas went out in Texas because of a cold snap and an ice storm that the Texas gas infrastructure wasn't equipped to manage, which had follow-on effects for the power grid. No gas to run generators means no power. We all remember that because one of their senators decided that that was a good time to take an otherwise unplanned vacation to Cancun. So, here we are again. Texas is having more once-in-a-lifetime weather, and the citizens are freezing in the dark again. Just how short is life expectancy in that state to have this many once-in-a-lifetime events so close together? I mean, I'm sure it's shorter than in some other places, but this is ridiculous. Anyway, this time, the outages are caused by local infrastructure failures. Now, these are of the sort that sometimes impact my area as well, but they don't usually come right on the heels of a string of fails. The lights in part of the state have been out for 3 days as of this writing. And once again, in bitter, cold weather. Seems to me like Texas has caught a really strong fail wind. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fungaboo and the crowd at Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks to Fungaboo, David, Azriel, and Thriller at Play for story leads. Additional thanks to an anonymous contributor, The Axe That Slayed Me, Ravenscloth, a concerned citizen, and one of Ritter's critters for appearing on today's show. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwnt music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Week music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker, and our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast, or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com, or post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next week when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Stay safe and be well.